Station number 11598, Ethel Sarasail, Reel 4.
We thought it was kind of funny that we were always carrying the gas for Patton, but we knew who was getting it. We really knew after Patton achieved his goal where he was going to go to, when he presented everyone who had anything to do with those missions with a bottle of champagne that he had liberated from France.
Oh.
And he made sure that everybody who had anything to do with it, every flight nurse, every pilot, every clerk in the office of the squadrons that were carrying those cans of gas over to him, got a bottle of champagne. And he really made sure that everyone got one. And I thought that was real nice.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember particular kinds of patients, maybe that were more difficult than others that you...
Most of the patients that we carried back were tank people that were in the tanks during that invasion, during that speed run across France. Mm-hmm. And in those days, the treatment for these people who had been burned in these horrible attacks on the tanks, these fellows always were burned very badly all over their body. Because they were trapped inside this burning tank. Mm-hmm. So what they did was encase these guys in a plaster cast. And that was how they protected them from the air getting to them.
I see.
Was in a plaster cast. That must have been horrible for those people that were burned, but that was the way they did it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when we got these patients on board our airplanes, every one of them had a small pair of scissors tied on a string around his neck. And the reason those scissors were there were so that if they got air sick or if they got sick for any reason on the way, we could cut the wires that were wiring their jaws together. They, of course, had bone injuries, too, and their jaws were wired together.
Uh-huh.
And so that they wouldn't choke on their vomitus, we could cut these wires. Most of the time, their whole faces and everything were enclosed in this cast, and they had one little hole where we could give them something to drink through that hole, or a cigarette. They always wanted a cigarette, and you stuck the cigarette through the little hole and lit the cigarette for them, and they were just in heaven, because most of them hadn't gotten any cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that happened that wasn't very nice was the fact that the Red Cross gave away cigarettes. And I suppose it might have been one of the things that gave the Red Cross a bad name. They gave us cartons of cigarettes. Each pack was labeled Gift of the Red Cross, not for sale. And we carried these cigarettes with us because these guys were hungry for a cigarette. And when we got over to France, a lot of times we get to these bases that... these landing fields that were no more than a clearing, and they lay these mats down, these steel mats, and that became an airfield. And there weren't any BXs, PXs, or any supplies for these people. They were just going out and making these airfields. And one of the things they wanted, too, was cigarettes and candy and that sort of
mm-hmm,
thing.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes they were just really needing a cigarette so bad. So we'd give them a whole pack. But we didn't know that some of these people were a little bit unscrupulous. They were selling these cigarettes.
Yeah.
And then the word got around that the Red Cross cigarettes were being sold, and so we weren't able to carry them anymore. And that was kind of bad, but I think... it was really bad that the Red Cross got the blame for having sold the cigarettes when they were really given to these men, and these men were bad and sold them.
You were talking about some of the patients, for example, the ones with the body casts, essentially the ones that had been burned. Did you feel like the training that you had in your nurse's training and also in flight school prepared you for the types of patients that you airbagged?
Well, I'm sure it would have, but most of the time when we got the patients for those short flights from France to England, we didn't have a chance to do any actual nursing. We picked them up from a forward field hospital where they were, the casts were put on, the dressings were put on, whatever was necessary. And for that short flight, we'd give them a drink of water or something to eat or a cigarette or something mm-hmm. like that. And I suppose the fact that we had nurses training made us know how to look for discomfort and that sort of thing. But we really didn't do a lot of nursing. Most of our nursing that we did was when we went out on a date. Every time we went out on a date, you know, it was blackout. The roads were very narrow, very crooked, had these hedgerows right up close to them.
Mm-hmm.
And these cars, some of these, well, the GI trucks, those 2.5-ton trucks, took up almost the whole road. And they, too, were going along the road without hardly any, just little slits for lights. And they would take one of these trucks on a Liberty Run, they called it, take the guys into town so they could see what the place was like. And sometimes the driver had a few beers, too, I think. But anyway, because of the bad roads and everything like that, they often had accidents. And we'd go out on a date. We always carried our Musette bag with our first aid kit, and we used it. I remember one night going prowling around in the dark in the ditch beside the road looking for the people that had been in the truck. And then we'd patch them up and get someone, the driver would try and get somebody to come out from the hospital to pick them up.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes
mm-hmm.
then we'd ride in the ambulance with them to the hospital and where they were taken care of further. But we did the first aid when we were out on a date.
on the ground.
We did have, during the Nijmegen invasion, the planes were taking off from our base at Membury. The C-47s took off with cords behind them connected to the C-5A gliders. And they had them behind them as they took off. And sometimes they would cut, the glider would cut loose for one reason or another. Maybe he had trouble with his steering or something like that. Sometimes maybe it was just panic that he hit the switch that cut them loose. And this one glider cut loose, came around and obviously had trouble with his steering, and he ended up in a hedgerow, crashed into a hedgerow.
Mm.
And we had a whole load of, this glider was filled with airborne troops going over for the invasion, and they were horribly hurt. Some of them were killed. And when we realized what was going on, we took off with the ambulance and went over to do what we could. The main thing we did was, as I said before, was give them a shot of morphine and make sure that we had an M on their forehead and lipstick so that the hospital knew that they had already been given a shot. And
mm-hmm.
we used our own dressings and that sort of thing to try to stop any bleeding before they were taken off to the hospital. So those things, a lot of times we got into that. But as I say, during the trip from France to England, there wasn't a whole lot of work that you could do. Nor
mm-hmm.
was there any real room in a C-47. It was so so small, and it just wasn't space to do anything.
What do you recall as being the worst experience of the war for you?
I think that particular situation when the glider hit the hedgerow. That was pretty
mm-hmm.
shocking, because these men were crying, and they were all in shock, of course, and they were horribly hurt. It was something that we weren't really expecting. When we went over to pick them up, we expected to pick them up in the ambulance, but not that they were going to be on stretchers coming out of there. We figured that we were just going to go over and pick them up.
Uh-huh.
And we were kind of shocked when we found what we did, that they had crashed and not landed.
Yeah. Switching gears a little bit, do you recall anything as being the funniest thing that happened to you during the war?
I can't think of anything offhand.
A lot of times, several funny things come to mind. I know it's difficult when you think, well, what could have been the most funny? Every now and then someone has just one story that's just, you know.
No, I can't think of anything in particular.
Okay. That's all right. Can you think of anything that you might have liked to be different about that time that you served as a flight nurse during the war? Like if there were one thing that you could have changed about it, what might that have been?
Well, it was a time that wasn't a fun time, but we were young kids, and the adventure was a good side of it. It was exciting. But, of course, the fact that so many didn't come back was just part of life at that time. It wasn't quite like the Vietnam War. It was something that we were all involved in. Mm-hmm. And everybody had family members who were killed in the war, whether they were in the Air Force or the Navy or whatever it was. But I can't think of anything in particular that I would have wanted to change. It was our life then.
Uh-huh. Based on the experiences that you had as a flight nurse during World War II, if you could offer a piece of advice to today's flight nurses, or maybe to those nurses who might be called on to serve as flight nurses in a future war, if there ever should be a future war, can you think of anything that you might want to pass on to those nurses?
I would say it'd be a great opportunity.
Uh-huh.
And certainly it's a great great teacher of life. It would be a great experience for them. And on the whole, the Air Force really took care of us and let us know what was going on and what was expected of us. We were very young and made a lot of mistakes, I'm sure, because we were so young and naive, but a person today who was young and naive would have the same problems. But certainly I wouldn't have... I think it was a great experience, and it was a happy time because of the camaraderie and mm-hmm. The things that we did. Of course, there was a lot of enthusiasm, and there was a great national spirit at that time. And I'm sure there would be in most future wars. The Vietnam conflict was a strange situation in that there was so much antagonism to the war itself. We didn't like the war, but we weren't arguing that the war was wrong. We just had to get Hitler out of there. And we were very high as far as patriotism was concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And in most wars, I think it is that way. I don't know what happened in Vietnam that turned people so anti-war. Nobody really wanted the war, but it was there.
Yeah.
And it was best for us to do what we could do.
So you would suggest to any nurses of today or future nurses maybe that if the opportunity for air evac duty presented itself, to go for it.
Oh, absolutely.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But I think from what they teach today, I mean, from what I know of the aeromedical research and that sort of thing that's going on, it certainly would be a great teaching thing for anybody who is going into another angle of the profession later, after their service. They still could learn a lot by being in the being a flight nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
the travel was great. I enjoyed that.
Both on and off duty, maybe.
Yes.
Oh. I feel like maybe I've rushed you through some of the, that I've been doing a lot of the talking in the past few minutes, asking you some questions. And I wonder if maybe there's anything that I haven't asked that you thought or hoped that I would, or if there might be something else about your experiences as a flight nurse during World War II that you might like to talk about?
No, I hadn't gotten around to thinking about that. There was something on the top of my tongue a while ago, and I can't think what it was now. One of the things that was a problem, and there were a lot of jokes made about it during World War II, the Stars and Stripes always carried funny anecdotes about the fact that they didn't have enough maps and the pilots didn't know where they were going. That wasn't really just joking. They didn't. I know that when we were going to land at Morlaix, this was a couple of weeks after our first trip, I think, and we were had been going into the area around Cherbourg. But this day we were told to go to Morlaix, which was on the Brest Peninsula. It was farther west.
Mm-hmm.
And the pilot found that he did not have the maps to go there. And so I sat behind him with a copy of the Stars and Stripes that had a map on it showing the activities over in that area. And we followed the map and the Stars and Stripes. Now, there, down there, that's the inlet that's right here on this map. And that's how we found the landing field at Morlaix.
Oh, well, I guess it's good that y'all had map reading or whatever.
Yes, I guess so. The map wasn't that good, but it did have the details of the coves and the rivers and that sort of thing so that we were able to find it.
It was. I'm sure they were glad to have you on board that particular mission.
I think they enjoyed having us on board. I don't think any time we really were bad. We used to get over to France, and as I said, often there weren't any PXs or anything. There was usually a field hospital nearby, but I remember one time we went into Le Mans, and we landed on these metal strips, and it rained a lot. It rained a whole lot. The metal strips were almost down into the mire.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a little bit too close to the edge of one of these strips. I guess the pilot couldn't quite see where the edge was. And we ran off into the mud. So we were stuck in the mud. And we were stuck there for hours. And we'd already loaded our patients on board. And I don't know whether it was hours or maybe it was only an hour, but it seemed like forever.
Uh-huh.
And everybody on the plane was hungry. And what they gave us to carry with us were cartons of K rations. The K rations had these hard biscuits in them. They had a hunk of chocolate that if you ate the whole hunk of chocolate, it would make you sick. It was that rich.
Mm-hmm.
And they were survival foods. And I can't remember now what I spread on them, but anyway, I ended up taking out several of these K rations. I think it was peanut butter. Some of them had peanut butter in them. And I spread these crackers with this stuff from the K-rations and passed them out so all the patients got something to eat. But can you imagine these poor sick... Well, some of them were sick. Most of them were injured. But anyhow, this is what they had to eat. And that's the only thing we had to feed them with. It was good food.
But I've heard that y'all often had to improvise, that... You know, you made do with what you had.
Right.
And
we had one canteen of water when we left. And when we got over to France, they couldn't give us any water because in spite of the fact that it was raining all the time, they didn't have any drinking water. They didn't mm-hmm. have any water to wash with and that sort of thing. So we had to use our canteen of water for whatever we needed, whether it was to clean patients or to drink or whatever. It was our canteen of water that we brought from England.
Mm-hmm. Were y'all ever actually assigned in France, or did you fly from England into...
I never was.
Okay.
But as I said, I left in November after our our trip down to southern France, mm-hmm. and then I came back from there as a patient, so mm-hmm. I never was stationed, but my squadron was later stationed in France.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But I wasn't.
But for you, England was your
the only place.
Home base.
I did make a trip from England to, from Prestwick, Scotland, back to the States. I made only one trip like that. It was C-54s.
Mm-hmm.
Took 24 hours to get back. They were slow. They were big and roomy compared to the C-47. But I was assigned, my patients for the trip were 24, I believe it was, walking wounded. And I was shocked when I came out to the plane because it was a DC-4. It was an airliner. Beautiful airline seats. And I had all of these patients were completely ambulatory. So my duties on the trip from Prestwick back to the States, we made a stop in Reykjavik, Iceland uh-huh. for eating. I did have some food to serve them. And I had to get out cards for them to play, so they could play cards, books for them to read and that sort of thing. And that's all I did on my trip from Prestwick to the States.
Almost like being a flight attendant.
It was, I said, I had always wanted to be a flight nurse, I mean a stewardess.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And I got on this plane and I looked at it and I said, I have arrived. I am a stewardess. And I flew with them from Prestwick to St. John's, Newfoundland, and then someone else took the flight from there on.
How did it compare to being a flight nurse, being a flight attendant for a
day?
Or
well, it was a lot easier. The patients mm-hmm. were a lot cleaner. Yeah. The situation was a lot cleaner, and it certainly was more comfortable. The C-47s, the only seats we had at that time were the bucket seats. We didn't even have, later on, they had planes that had better seats, more like airline seats. But what we had were the stripped-down military version, the ones for the airborne troops.
I think you mentioned sometime about, and I don't know if it was you or maybe some other nurses in your squadron, flying into France to pick up patients and finding out that the patients on your plane, instead of being the American GIs, were
German prisoners.
German prisoners.
Right.
Uh-huh. And I wonder, did you have
my first flight. My first flight. And I'd been dying to go. We knew that they had started the air evacuation flights, and yet I hadn't gotten a call yet. I think some of the members of my squadron had, but I hadn't gotten a call to go. So this was to be my day. I'm going over and pick up patients, and I was feeling very gung-ho to bring back our wounded soldiers back to safety. And my plane was loaded, and most of my patients were German prisoners. And that to me, at first I thought, well, I guess the whole trip I felt like it was wrong for those German prisoners to be on there, especially the one who seemed to be a pretty high-ranking officer. He had a beautiful uniform, beautiful black boots on top of him on his litter that he was guarding so that nobody could take. And he seemed very angry. And I thought this was just wrong. And I realized much later that, of course, this was done on purpose because these men were probably wanted, these prisoners were wanted back in England for interrogation
mm-hmm.
because they could probably help them, and they wanted them back there where they couldn't get back to the German lines, and besides that could be interrogated for secrets.
Mm-hmm.
But it did seem wrong at the time.
When there were maybe the American GIs that you felt like needed your services
right.
more than the German prisoners.
And just before that, we'd had a story about some of the airborne troops had gone over. Excuse me. Had gone over, and instead of landing in the clearing where they were supposed to be, the wind caught them, and they were dropped into the trees. And when they got into the trees, it was a heavy forest, and then they got into the trees, and they couldn't break loose. They were hanging there in the trees, and the Germans came along and slashed them or shot them. And it just, you know, this was just before this time when I went over and picked up these patients. And it really made me feel bad. As I say, obviously, there was a reason for it that we didn't know. Mm-hmm. One of the things, as you said before, things you might have wanted changed, I think that certainly today, now that air evacuation has gotten a lot more regulated and, well, they know more about what to do about air evacuation, that this wouldn't happen. But during the war, I think one of the big problems was the fact that we didn't have proper communication. And we'd be told back in England that we were to go to San Lo to pick up a load of patients. And we'd get there, and the patients weren't there anymore. They had been waiting for transport back. They were sick and wounded that had to go back. And they had sent them maybe by trucks to a port to go back by boat because they couldn't keep them any longer. And it just seemed like there was so many snafus as far as that was concerned that I went over frequently to pick up patients. And I'd go over with a load of ammunition or whatever it was they were carrying over, and I'd get over there, and there weren't any patients. Then sometimes they would send us to another base, and we'd get to this other base and not find patients, and end up going back completely empty. And it seemed like there was so much time wasted, and so much, so many wounded that weren't taken care of because of their snafus in communication. But that was probably, in those days, we didn't have as good communication. And it wasn't as well organized as it is today.
I know it's getting kind of late, and I had told you that we would be talking for about 2 hours.
And we've come to that.
I think we've come to that. And I certainly don't want to tire you out. I wonder if there's anything else that right now that you wanted to say before we close the tape.
No, I don't think so. I've been talking for hours.
Well, and I could go on for hours and hours listening, but I know that...
It was a great time of life, though, and, of course, youth and enthusiasm. In those days, the patriotism, fire and all that, it was a good life, but we had a lot of good friends develop because of it. And certainly there were things that were done that you did for each other that was above and beyond. You got to be real buddies. In those days, we didn't have to worry about being a friend with a girl either.
Sounds like maybe that was one of the things that kind of helped you through.
Right. We were a family. Mm-hmm. And it just is, it's obvious in these people that are coming for the reunion that they feel like they don't want to lose that. They'd like to relive those days when we were a family and we were a group of people that really cared about each other.
Well, I look forward to the upcoming World War II Flight Nurse reunion, and I think with all the effort that you've put into it, that it will be a good one. I thank you for sharing your experiences with me.
Thank you for writing our history.
Oh, well, you're most welcome.
We feel like we're really a part of history.
Well, you certainly are.